the Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.
All right, welcome to this episode. Today we are with David Cook. He is a multi-platinum producer, mix engineer, songwriter based in California and Colorado. He's worked with Kanye West, Tate McRae, and Phil Wickham. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, so I know that your eyes are a little sensitive to light, so I just thought you wouldn't be alone and wearing shades, so I joined you there.
I feel like this is too much.
Too much? All right, we'll take them off.
Oh, I can't take myself seriously with the shades.
It's so funny. So I brought you on today because you have some great stories about people you've worked with, but also, you know, you've had great success, and I'd like to share with my listeners, you know, stories of success and how we can be more successful and kind of, you know, use other, you know, ideas that maybe are unconventional. So
love that. Yeah. Tell me, actually, I don't know if I've ever like listened to an entire podcast of yours. I've seen like snippets clips on socials and stuff, but I haven't like you said this is podcast 121.
Yeah. 121.
That's quite an accomplishment. So you're doing them like once a week or?
Yeah. Kind of like once a week. I mean, we've had some days that we've taken off and travel and so we've been able to do it, but yeah.
And you've had Navy SEALs on, you've had, I'm sure, people
professional boxers in the
industry. Wow.
Yeah.
So what is
kind of fraudsters that have been in prison.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's kind of been like the overarching theme for every...
I think it's trying to get, you know, success in like real estate and finance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that like, you know, people who are in that industry or in those industries can like listen and say, kind of connect. I try to take like the idea of how do you look at through the lens of a finance and real estate person? How do you look at success in different people's lives that are not in the business?
Okay.
You know, like taking someone who is a boxer, right? For example, that was on recently Paul Vaden, the ultimate Vaden, you know, and just kind of using, you know, I ask these questions that are sort of similar to, you know, how do you apply certain things that you've done in your life to also be successful in the mortgage business?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's relatable in some ways. Some ways, you know, obviously talking about Kanye won't be necessarily relatable to most people, but
I mean,
it
could be. He while I was working for him, one of his big projects was he was trying to develop these like miniature self-sustainable civilizations.
Oh, wow. Like real estate related.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I am up to my neck in NDAs, so I have to be careful about some things I can say. So if I stop and have to think about it,
I may have to change the subject. Trouble.
No, I don't want to get in trouble.
Don't get our thing canceled.
He's done a really great job of getting himself in the trouble. So I think I'm probably good.
He's been in a lot of trouble.
And I can actually defend him quite a bit too. Oh. But yeah, he was at one point when I was working for him, when I was in Wyoming, he was developing these domes. He called them domes. And he was really kind of obsessed with like this Tatooine Star Wars style architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the back of his land, cause we were on like 4,000 acres. So he was just digging out this massive hole in the earth and they were pouring concrete, to build this giant kind of like almost half underground dome.
Wow.
And
he's definitely a visionary. Like he's got crazy, big ideas. And
well, I think that's what's interesting about him is people know him as like the rapper and as like the fashionista.
We call him Yay.
But he's just like completely creative. Like,
yeah,
I learned a lot about creativity from him because there's like, it's completely unadulterated creativity. Like say what you want about the guy, you know, he a self-proclaimed genius, but he kind of is. And for no other reason that he's not afraid to do anything.
Yeah. And I don't know, because I don't know his background, but I would assume he didn't just get handed everything he has.
Have you watched the documentary on Netflix?
No, I need to watch it.
I would recommend, like, if you're a Kanye fan or you're just interested in him as a person, it's actually like a really, really entertaining documentary. But it starts with him kind of being a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously things, I think, have gotten to his head maybe a little bit over the years.
Yeah.
I don't want to like judge him or, you know, some of it's merited, some of it's not. He has been successful, and part of his allure and I think what appeals about him to people is kind of that big ego he has. Mm-hmm. You know, he believes in himself more than anybody else.
He's his biggest fan.
But that's how he was from the beginning.
Yeah.
He was more of a normal person, but he just like, he worked so, so, so hard. But there's these awesome videos in the documentary of like him in the studio in LA with Pharrell. And he's like starts freestyling or he plays his tracks from College Dropout. Mm-hmm. And people just started losing their minds. But he wasn't taken seriously as a rapper for a really long time. He had a really, really, everyone called him a producer. So it took him a really long time to like break through and get people to look at him as a rapper. It's like a struggle for him. And wow. Then once he broke on the scene, everyone was like, oh, he's like the best.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
And so he didn't come from, did he come from nothing or did he just come from like a small background? Like a-
well, it was Chicago. Yeah. He kind of came from nothing. It was like him and his mom. And he grew up in the Chicago scene.
Yeah.
And then he started, you know, learning from local rappers when he was younger. And then he started getting into making tracks, you know, on like MPCs and sampling records and all that stuff. And like a big part of his sound was that he was sampling like old records. Like if you listen to those first, like everyone loves Kanye because of College Dropout and Graduation and all that stuff. And then he started, you know, breaking into some new stuff and leading the charge with, I forget the name of the album with the heart on it, but that was like, you know, if he didn't make those albums and like Drake would have never happened,
right?
Who ended up changing rap music and hip hop.
Yeah. So I don't care what anyone says. The fact that he did, you know, from nothing or almost nothing to what he is today, even if he's, you know, like you said, love him or hate him, like the amount of success this guy's created and wealth that he's created, right. In industry, you know, whether it's, you know, the stuff that he's invested in or, you know, created shoe lines or whatever, you know, all that stuff, it's very impressive. You know, so people love to hate or judge, but at the end of the day, you got to give mad respect for someone that could create something like that.
Well, yeah, and I think what you can take away from him as anybody, whether you're creative or you're in real estate, you're building a business, like that guy was not afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And he just fully believed in himself. Like you're kind of like that. You're not an asshole, but you, not to me, but but you are very confident in yourself and your abilities. And when you get an idea, you'll just kind of send it and go for it. And like based on my observations,
steamroller, right?
Yeah, being on the outside, I'm like, yeah, it seems to be working for John.
Yeah,
I'm more calculated. Like I will run everything through the paces. Like my biggest struggle is that I don't like to fail and I feel like I don't have time to fail, but
yeah,
I'm turning 39 in a week and I'm like, maybe I should fail just like a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the, to not have a fear of failure is a very important thing to success, because I don't like failing, but I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah.
So I think if you're not afraid of failing, you have a much better chance of moving from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm, which
That's
is
true.
What they say the definition of success is. Moving from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm is pretty much how people succeed.
Yeah, you finally land on something that sticks. I mean, I've failed a lot. I think my fear of failure comes from my upbringing. Like, we grew up pretty poor. Mm. And so when I started experiencing success and like making money, I like held it really tight. Like, oh, I don't want to lose this. And then when I would fail, it would feel like this massive hit. Like, oh, I don't want to go back to like ground zero. I think is it a dude named Alex Hormozi? I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. He's like one of those internet personalities that inspires me, like a Gary Vaynerchuk type of thing. He probably would be hated to be compared to
Gary V.
Yeah. But he said like he created this big company called like Acquisition and he sold it for like $100 million, I think.
Nice.
I'm probably screwing all this up. But anyway, he made a lot of money, sold his company. He worked like insane hours, like wasn't afraid to fail. And he had all these different business models that he was trying at the time. But he said the way that he got over it and the way that he just sent it and was able to overcome that fear of failure was he just did the math and he was like, okay, well, worst case scenario, I run completely out of money. I have several awesome friends that I could call up and go crash on their couch.
Right.
And I could split my time driving for Uber. And he had a fitness company, a super jack guy. So he's like, I could drive an Uber and I could be a male exotic dancer at the strip clubs in Vegas. And I could still make $200,000 a year and get back on my feet.
I'm sure they make money.
Yeah. I've never. But he was like, that as my baseline for failure is still like 200 grand a year. So he's like, screw it. I'm just going to do it all.
Send it.
Yeah. So if you know what your baseline is when you fail.
Yeah.
Kind of can, I think, give you that courage a little bit.
Yeah. So you and I have a similar upbringing.
Yes.
In the sense that we're both sons of preachers.
Yes.
And just like you, my parents didn't have money. They were, you know, and so I never tasted money when I was
a kid. It's funny what that does to you psychologically when you start to like start experiencing the finer things in life. You're like on a private jet or you're staying in like some one of the nicest hotels in the world.
What makes you never want to be poor again?
Like, no, you're like.
So I've gone through the cycles where, you know, I've lost everything.
Yeah.
But then it's like someone said once, they're like, John refuses to be poor. Like, I just refuse to be poor. Like, even if I'm
You're really good at refusing to be poor.
If I'm broke, like, I've had a couple times in my life when I've been flat out broke.
Right.
Where I had to use, like, gift cards to go to dinner and stuff. Like, just, you know, I'd still ignored that I was broke because I was going to, like, Morton's with a gift card from a credit card that I used to, you know.
It's like an episode of episode of Entourage. You ever watch Entourage? Yeah, and Johnny Drama's, like, talking to Vince, and Vince is, like, he's like trying to find an apartment, but he's like broke because he like turned down too many movies and he can't get a new film. And like Ari Gold and his business manager are freaking out. And Johnny Drama's like, bro, I know you're broke, but like you can't live in that place. It's bad for your self-esteem. Yeah. I always think about that. I'm like,
that makes sense. Yeah. Maybe,
like, you know, just spend a little more and it's not bad for your self-esteem.
Plus you push yourself a little bit more, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we used to make, so when our top producers would have a massive month, we would pressure them so much to buy an expensive car.
Yeah.
And finance it because we're like, that's going to give them that overhead pressure where they need to keep making more money.
It is funny. Like, you can be super responsible and put away a lot of money, and that's great. It's awesome. You should always save your money. You shouldn't be spending everything. You shouldn't spend money you don't have. But there is something to be said about, you know, it's like, especially when all ships rise with the tide, like when all of your homies start winning and everybody's winning together and everyone's getting nicer cars and nicer houses and nicer furniture and clothes and going on nicer trips, you'll all kind of go there together. But it is funny how like
it makes competition.
Oh, like
healthy competition.
Oh yeah. But you think, I mean, I know with just like the internet market and all these new online business models, and there's just like so many there's probably more like 20-year-old, like, you know, multimillionaires now than there's ever been in history. Oh, like, I meet kids all the time. I'm like, you do what? You're 23 and you own a, I'm like, you're 23 and you own a luxury car rental company and make $1 million a year. Like, and you're just like chilling. Like, but I run into people like that all the time. But yeah, when you start like raising your baseline, your overhead goes up. Yeah. Then you're kind of stuck there. You can't go back.
No, you can't.
You could
refuse to be poor like I do. It's like
you could.
I am not taking that Uber. What's the Uber X? The cheapest one.
That's what I took here actually, because my truck's in the shop.
I'm like, I refuse to sit in that. Yeah, I sound like a snob right now, but
John Maddox is not a snob. People, he's not a really nice guy.
But like, you know, it's true where if you've tasted the finer things of life, it just sucks going backwards. I don't like it.
I'm a bougie bitch. Okay.
Same. Okay. So back to, we kind of have similar upbringing. How can you go from being the son of a preacher broke to working with Kanye on private jets and stuff? Like,
I don't know.
Tell us a little bit of your story. Like what got you there?
So I grew up in the church. So I got started making music in church
early.
Young. And you can probably relate to this. Like
totally.
When you grow up outside of the church and you start learning music, it's usually actually like, if you look at, I'll digress from that for a second, but
a lot of stars have upbringing, you know, in church, right?
From like Elvis to like the Beatles to Michael Jackson to, you know, pretty much
Katy
like
Perry. She was sang in church.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Martin, like so many people who are just Beyonce, like people that got started really young, they had that access to other musicians and microphones and stages and
guitars,
audiences.
Piano,
well, it's just also, it's the audience factor.
Yeah.
So like, think about like Ella, for example, right now, your daughter is extremely talented. Like, she only gets to play out if she gets to go do a show.
Right.
But I grew up in church where there was like 3 services a week. So starting at the age of 12, I was on stages playing an instrument in front of people and getting conditioned to do that and cutting my teeth.
Your 10,000 hours at 12.
Oh, super early.
Versus like someone who's, you know, they're in school, they're so busy with other, you know, activities like sports and all that. But yeah. Ella did get to do chapel. Like, so yeah. she was doing that at like age 12,
yeah.
13. But
so that, yeah. And she's amazing and she has that advantage over people. But
plus she got to be in my studio when she was five.
That's
six,
true.
And
yeah.
For seeing sure. it, seeing that stuff happen.
She's, but, yeah, she's very comfortable in all those settings.
So you were in the church and.
Yeah. So in the church, kind of cut my teeth doing that, was like singing at church. And then out of church, like I would start and join little bands. Mm-hmm. Like with my buddies in like high school and then college, and started playing shows, and we were making just, you know, mainstream music. We weren't making like Christian music or anything right. like that. But we would still like play at church, and then yeah. we'd go play at the coffee shops. I mean, my
like
first
band rehearsal was always like,
oh, church, it was great church, because yeah. if you volunteered or worked at the church, you could go set up the sound system in like the recreational room and practice on the stage.
Right.
Like you were getting an advantage over anybody who didn't have access to that.
Right.
But we grew up, I mean, this is like circa, like my first band that started playing shows was, I was 17. So this would have been like 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when like remember when Starbucks was like new? It was like new. Yeah. And Starbucks was like a craft coffee place.
Right. So bougie.
So we would play shows at like Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and wow. that was really funny. So I came up in the same music scene in Pittsburgh as Dan Smyers from the country group Dan and Shay. So I met Dan. Dan went to school with my girlfriend, same school as my girlfriend at the time. Or no, neighboring schools, but with a bunch of my friends. And he was in the same crew of people like as the girl I was dating at the time when I was in high school. And anyway, I met him when he was like 14 at like Ross Park Mall. And our bands played a show together at Starbucks.
That's
and
funny.
It was the first time he ever sang live, and he was 14 years old.
Wow.
How
do you sound?
He sounded like a 14 year old boy. He's
got a great voice.
Yeah.
Now. I mean, I don't know how he sounds.
Yeah. So we grew up like playing in the same scene, like in punk rock bands. Like we had like crazy hair and looked like complete idiots, but
yeah,
that was what was popular at the
time. So how, okay, then I just remember so, right now you had a, you got a record deal at some point.
Yeah, so that was my,
talk about how you got from there to there.
Yeah, that was my first band. That band broke up and I went to college for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not good at school. I hate being told what to do. I hate listening to people lecture me and I can't remember like big words.
It's like the Charlie Brown. Wah,
wah, yeah, that's wah, what it sounds wah, like wah, to me. I just can't do it. I remember like my... I'm not stupid. Like I'm not a dumb person. I think I'm pretty smart, but
yeah, but like there's book smart and then there's
but
like
my
smart.
GPA got down to like a 1.92 and I remember going to a civ arts class and I thought it was art class. So I was like, I nailed this.
Yeah.
And I got my exam back and it was a D+. And I was like, F this. I'm dropping out of school. So I just dropped out. I went home. My parents were like, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know. And I went and got a job at like American Eagle, like selling clothes. And then I was working at American Eagle selling clothes. I was 19 years old. And I also had a lawn and landscaping company.
Oh, so you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I mean, I got my first job when I was 9 years old. My parents made me get a newspaper route because I wanted a dog.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I forgot we've got that in common. So yeah, I had a newspaper route and then started cutting grass when I was like 11, 12, when I was big enough to push a lawnmower and not run myself over. So I would literally walk around the neighborhood with a lawnmower and like cut grass for like 11 or 12 bucks for people. And then the neighborhood grew. We were in like a new subdevelopment in Virginia, in the DC area. And I started doing like mulching and lands. I was making like serious money, like Dude. as a kid who was like when I was in middle school. And I kept doing that all through high school. And then when I came back from college, I had my dad let me use his truck. I got a trailer, a riding mower. And what I did was I created like a fake team that worked for me. So I got multiple cell phones. It was just me, but I used like different names. So I was David. Then there was like Evan, which is my brother's name. And then like Mike. And so like
somebody
would call, be like, yeah, this is Dave's lawn and landscaping. This is Evan's big. What can I do? And I would like schedule them. And they're like, all right, yeah, we're going to send somebody out to you on Tuesday morning. We're going to take Love care this. Of you. No problem. It's like $50. And then I would roll up. I pretend to be that guy. And then I would go back around and do collections and invoice them. And I would use a different name. But it was great because I had a couple times where customers like the grass was like 2 feet tall and it would look like shit after I was done. And I'd be like, I don't know what to do about this. So I just bail because I didn't want to be there anymore.
Right.
And then I get these complaints and I'd be like, ah, you know what? That was Mike. We're going to talk to him. We're going
to fire Mike.
So anyway, did that. And then I went through, then my college, high school sweetheart, like totally shattered my heart into a million pieces. And
that bitch.
I was super emo. No, she's yeah, maybe, who knows?
She's going to. I was still on the go. She's going to see this podcast.
She's
called and call
she's,
you.
She's definitely not.
yeah, that for sure won't happen.
No. So dropped out of college, did that, you know, lawn and landscaping thing and trying to figure out what I was doing with my life. And then I went through that breakup. My cousin was like, he was just graduating high school and he was a bass player. And he's like, hey, do you want to, we should start a band. And I was like, yeah, we should start a band. I'll play some music. And
how old were you?
I was 19.
Okay.
So we got together at the local like mega church where we all like played for the high school and college kids and stuff. And there were two other guys and we just started jamming. We wrote some songs and it turned out like, I guess we were pretty good and people liked us. So we started playing shows and people really started packing out the shows and we were like winning battles of the band and stuff. And it was right when MySpace was starting to kick off, right?
Remember that.
And MySpace, like before MySpace, like I feel like we all forget that like TikTok and Instagram are like so new. Like TikTok's been around for like 5 years and yeah. Instagram is like 15, 10 years old, yeah. 15 years old. And then, you know, Facebook was only for college students until like 2011 or something.
Right.
So it was only MySpace. And
that's it. Tom.
Yeah, Tom. I met Tom.
You did?
I did. I played a song for him in his office.
I didn't even know if he was real.
He's a real guy. He's a real guy.
I wonder what he's up to.
He looks, he's probably just.
Wasn't his picture like kind of him looking back or something?
He's probably in a yacht somewhere with a bunch of crazy people hanging out with like Jeffrey Epstein.
I hope he's not like.
No, he sold that for like $510 million or something.
Didn't Justin Timberlake buy that?
I don't know. But anyway.
I think he owns it now, but keep
going. But yeah, back on my train of thought. So I'm too ADD. You got to stay with me, bro.
Yeah, me too.
You got to stay with me. You're going to lose me.
We're going to bounce so many places.
Okay, so coming back. So yeah, we started utilizing MySpace and playing local shows and that we recorded an album with a local producer who is a friend of ours from the church named Paul Barber, also known as Relly. And he's gone on to do big things now. Like now he owns a massive, playback company that does all kinds of, it's more than playback. It's just like production all around for live artists. And he works for like Taylor Swift and One Republic and like he designs
who's
rigs
Taylor
for like
Swift?
Lady Gaga. Yeah. So he produced our first he produced actually all of our records, but he produced our first record and he was really great and he was a total perfectionist and made us sound like awesome.
Yeah.
So we made this, we probably made one of the most professional sounding local band records that had been heard in our area. And our song spoke to people and then we started playing shows and I'll never forget. We played this local, we were playing like gymnasiums and rec centers and wherever we could play. We were just playing anywhere for $100.
That's so cool.
And then there was a venue called Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia, which a lot of artists play at. It's smaller, but it's a really well-known venue. And we went and played there one night and I remember the place was packed. There were 400 people there.
Wow.
And we didn't have my band, we were called My Favorite Highway. We weren't able to like gauge that. We didn't know what that was, like where it was coming from, who these people were, how they heard about us. But it was all these people that came to see us. And we like went at the end of the night to like close out with the promoter of who owned the club, Daniel. And he like hands me $800. And I was like,
what?
I was like, what's this? And he's like, that's your draw, man. You guys packed the place out tonight. Like that's your cut.
Dude.
And that's when it clicked in my head. I was like, oh.
That's back when $800 was a lot of money.
Well, this was the first thing. Like then we started making real money because we learned about merchandising.
Back then, dude, that was what year? 2000?
That was like 2007, 2008.
Okay. It's, yeah, still a lot more money.
Well,
for
a 19, 20-year-old kid.
Yeah, that's good.
So anyway, we were like, we got to capitalize on MySpace. So we went to work on MySpace. We started like messaging people on other bands' MySpace pages, like just grassroots marketing the same way people do on like TikTok and Instagram. Like we were like the same thing, like the artists that grow on platforms now on like with Reels and all that stuff. We were like that for MySpace. So we were cutting edge and doing things that the labels didn't understand then. They're like, what are these guys doing? How are they independently blowing up?
Yeah.
So we started blowing up on MySpace. We became like in the top 10 bands on MySpace. Dude. We started getting a lot of record label attention because we were moving all these numbers on our own. We started touring on our own and you couldn't do that before.
Yeah.
Like the networking in MySpace.
Deal.
Yeah. You used to have to call venues and say like, hey, we're down in Virginia. I saw your venue up in New Jersey. Yeah. And it was like this long process. Well, MySpace made it where you could just network with fans in different markets, hit up promoters, and then you could, your first show in Michigan might be like 10 people. And then your second show might be 100. And then you go back and the next thing you know, you're playing for 1,000 people. So we were just doing that, hammering these markets over and over and over. And while we were doing that, we started just through that growth online, because as an independent artist, that was kind of unheard of at the time. We were just connecting with people in different parts of the industry all over the country and the world. And we were able to meet with like music licensing folks who were programmers for like The Hills and Laguna Beach and MTV. And so we got our songs featured on those shows.
That's cool.
And we were also, we were one of the first artists independently to be able to distribute our music on iTunes through a company called TuneCore at the time. And that first year they came out, we were like one of their top 10 most selling artists. We were on TV shows. I mean, we're like 20-year-old kids and we're making like 20 grand a month in music sales, then shows, then merchandise, like buying our own vans, like tons of bands and artists going to debt. Like we didn't have any debt. We were just crushing it. And then long story short, all of that kind of grassroots hard work we were doing ended up getting the attention of a lot of record labels. So we were flying to New York, we were flying to showcases. LA showcases left and right. We played for probably every major record label in the industry. And we had a lot of great opportunities there at the time. You know, looking back, there's definitely opportunities I think we should have taken, but we were looking at like dollar amounts more than we were looking at
the
relationships themselves.
The strategic.
Yeah. So we ended up playing a showcase in New York because we ended up courting a manager at Crush Management who managed at the time like Fall Out Boy and Gym Class Heroes and Panic at the Disco and all these massive artists at that time. So we were in talks with Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy. I don't know if you remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted to sign us. And it came down to like his label, Decadence, and Virgin Records. And the manager at Crush set up this big showcase for us at the Knitting Factory in New York. And like there were so many A&Rs there that came out. It was crazy.
Wow. Did you have a following in New York? So did you bring fans and they all...
Fans were there. We played. But we played for this room full of execs that got the invite and came out to see. And then after that,
Is that nerve wracking? Because you know, like, future's on the line with this.
Well, at this time, we had played so many showcases that
you kind of got used to it.
I don't think we cared. Yeah, I don't think we cared. Maybe we did.
Plus, you were probably so excited because you were good as a band and you knew you were going to rock.
Yeah, we were locked in. So that ended up, that's how we got our first record deal with Virgin Records. So we signed like $500,000 deal with Virgin. It was an all in deal. They bought the master from our self produced record, which was awesome. Made music videos. There's a lot of like embarrassing stuff of me on the internet.
Yeah, look it up. My Favorite Highway. He looks so different with no beard.
Which is
and
a
your
good
long one. Hair. Like, I still to this day, I'll go and watch it and send you a link or something.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's borderline embarrassing, but I just embrace it now. But anyway, so we toured, we did that whole thing. And then, the record just ended up not doing great with Virgin. And so Virgin got acquired by EMI and was getting ready to drop us. But our A&R at the time was, our lead A&R was Rob Stevenson.
Yeah, I met him.
Yeah, who signed The Killers.
Right. So you were label mates with The Killers, with 36?
Well, we were label mates. He signed them. I think
he was the EMI or...
Well, he... whatever.
Rob Stevenson was... What was that label that The Killers were on?
I can't remember. Atlantic Interscope or Universal or something.
I think it might have been Universal. But you were label mates with 30 Seconds to Mars.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Yep. There was like, if you walked into the EMI building, it was like Katy Perry's picture, like our picture, 30 Seconds to Mars. It was a funny time. But anyway.
Did you ever meet Sir Richard Branson?
I never, no, that was, I was there past his time. But I did meet.
Yeah, because he sold the label.
I met Chris Martin and I met Katy Perry. And at the same time, I was like sandwiched between them at a Grammy party. And I was like, I really didn't care about Katy Perry, but Chris Martin was like the coolest person ever. He had just won. Yeah. Oh, I mean, that was a million years ago. I assume he's still the same person, but
yeah,
it was, we're at this party and Rob was there and we're all drinking and having a great time. And Rob's like, have you met Chris or Katie? And I was like, no, but I would love to. Yeah. And so he brings me up to Katie and she does this.
Like to give her a kiss on the hand.
Yeah. And I was like, Your Majesty. And then Chris was just like this super
she
sweet.
She was a huge star then though, probably. Right.
Yeah. I mean that was she was, it was nine? Like when was I kissed it? A girl and everything. 10? This was nine. Yeah.
It was nine.
But it was when Coldplay just won Record of the Year for Viva La Vida, like arguably one of the best songs ever.
Great record.
And so I go up to Chris and I was like, man, I know that you just won like a Grammy for this record and it's amazing. And I'm sure everyone, you're validated, you know it's amazing. I was like, but that song just like blew my mind the first time I heard it. And he goes, you don't think the vocals are a little low in the mix? And I was like, I don't think it matters anymore, but...
Yeah, I mean, we can't do anything about it. It sounds great.
Anyway.
That's a great line.
Anyway, we toured. We broke up. It's taking me a while to get to my current career. But yeah, we toured. We broke up. And
The breakup just because you guys, the record didn't do well? Or was it?
Well, we got dropped from our label. And what happened was there was a producer in LA named Mike Busby, who is a dear friend, who was kind of a mentor to me when I was a younger writer and producer. Like, he taught me so much about producing music and songwriting, and he like developed and launched like Maren Morris's career, and he did songs with Katy Perry, and he wrote the song Try for Pink, and I mean he wrote like Holy for Florida Georgia Line. Like he was just a profound songwriter.
Yeah.
And he had this big personality, and every time anybody would work with him, everyone was like saying his praises. He would like, his personality would just fill the room, and his creative energy was just like, it would overtake you.
Wow.
And you felt like you were like a better songwriter. I don't know anybody that, like some people, maybe it was like polarizing for them, but I remember the first time I ever tracked vocals with him and I was like, I'm never going to be the same singer again because I just learned so much from this guy in like 2 hours. And I still use the techniques that he imparted on me in the vocal booth to this day. But we had a...
Which is just like really working hard.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it... Yeah, you know, there's two ways of doing it. It's like sing a couple times or sing 100 times. Mm-hmm. And I think I know where you're going. Is like, no, he was demanding perfection from you.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, no, do it again. Do it again.
He had a reputation for like making people cry in the booth or like pissing them off. And I loved it. I was like, push me, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it takes to have greatness.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah.
There's a difference between average, good, and great, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think the difference between average and good is not that far, but from good to great is like a bigger gap.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people can be good.
I know a lot of good people. Yeah. And I think, it's funny how many good people become really successful because they just are happy with being good and the quantity of good that they can produce.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But think of John Mayer. Like, I you know, his first hit, The Bodies of Wonderland, right? Great song. As far as a hit, like as far as just like catchy.
Yeah.
But I didn't really respect him until I went and saw him play live. And when I saw him with his guitar and the way he was just beyond good, he was truly probably one of the greatest guitar players that I'd ever seen live.
Yeah, like, he's like a Stevie
and I never
Ray
knew
Vaughn.
That. I had no idea. Right. Yeah. Cause when you listen to a pop record, you're not like thinking you don't get to see the greatness cause it's just coming through the tracks and it sounds great. But a lot of people they sound great. On a CD or on a track, but live, that guy must have spent who knows how many hours practicing.
I have a podcast I need to send you. It's not a podcast. It's actually something that a friend of mine. She was a Berklee student, and he came and spoke at Berklee when she was there, and did like a 3-hour like just like random lecture breakout session where he like talked about his processes and his career like very candidly and played some songs, and she recorded the whole thing on her iPhone as a memo. And so I have to send it to you. It's on my Dropbox, but it's pretty amazing. Just like, I know some people think John Mayer is kind of a dick, but his creative approach to things and the way he sees the world and thinks about his methods and the way he does things, I think is pretty profound.
But I mean, think about that. No one sees all the hard work that goes into making a John Mayer.
Well, he talks about how, like, when he comes up with guitar parts, a lot of times he's just like laying on the couch and he's just playing a riff like over and over. Like, he'll just be playing that riff. Like, so many of his songs is just like him messing around on the guitar and then it becomes the song.
But to do that, he had to put in just, you don't even know how many hours.
Well, I know a lot of guys.
Of learning and practicing and becoming who he is.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys who are phenomenal guitar players. And like to this day, they still practice like 2 hours a day. They play their scales. They do it. I mean, that's what it takes.
And I think some of it's got to come from a love of it, doing it. Oh, yeah. Right? Because you wouldn't just sit there and do it if you hated it.
No.
But like John Mayer must just love playing the guitar. Just love it.
Yeah, he absolutely does. He nerds out on it.
Yeah. I don't love it that much. And that's why I just, you know, I used to practice a lot and shred.
Yeah.
But I just don't play anymore because I just don't love it. I don't get the same satisfaction.
I don't play guitar as much as I used to. I definitely play piano more now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I make my coffee in the morning, I sit down at the piano and I like.
That's cool.
Pull
some love it.
I love piano. Piano too. Yeah. Like, well, guitar is cool because it, but because you can play it laying down and get comfy with the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But with piano, the piano, like the sound of the piano sings back to you. And it, like,
oh, I'm sure there's some medical, like, right? Like the vibrations. There's got to be.
Speaking of, I did this crazy thing this morning called the total digression away from what we were talking about.
No, it's just great. I'm following it.
But we did this. My buddy Isaac, his dad owns this company called Hydrate Spa in Encinitas, right by the jiu-jitsu gym and the Ding Factory. Little shout out, plug. They're awesome.
Shout it.
Go get fixed up, change your life.
Nice. Jiu-jitsu.
Crazy modalities.
Not jiu-jitsu, but this.
No, yeah, Hydrate Spa. So they do like red light therapy. They do, they have these crazy like hydrogenated spas.
Do they have like an oxygen chamber too?
I didn't, they have some.
Do they have the freeze tank?
I actually pictured this thing because it was just, it looked like, it's like an egg. It's like what the guys in like the, and like Dune went into to like recalibrate their bodies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, check out this thing, man.
We'll put a clip up on
look at this. Yeah, look, you go in this thing and it closes like around you and your head sticks. No, your head sticks out and it like releases all of this vapor. I'm totally messing this up because I don't know anything scientific.
But it's just vapor or what's in
it? I don't want to say because I don't know exactly. I can maybe.
But it just makes you feel good.
Well, it releases these vapors and heat and things.
Oh, so kind of like a sauna?
Yeah, he said it was like an infrared sauna.
So you get sweaty and you just get
but your head's toxins. Out. So it's like all this, and it emits frequencies.
Ooh.
So it basically pulls out. He said he'll like get out of it, and like the towel will have all these like toxins on it.
No way.
That's been like around.
I gotta try this. I gotta try.
Yeah, it's right by the house, so why wouldn't you? And then we did this thing called a Rasha. Look at this. And what? It's kind of like this. It's almost like it's got Tesla coils in it and all these crazy, it emits all these crazy frequencies. And it, you walk into it, it's this acoustically treated dome, a little smaller in this room. There's like 2 zero gravity chairs that are tied into the thing that emits the frequencies. And then they've got like good sets of headphones you put on, they blindfold you and you lay back and it just starts playing these wild frequencies. And it's kind of like, it kind of feels like, it feels a little bit like a psychedelic experience because you have to just
we have to do this.
Yeah, we totally will. I'll call him. Be like,
you,
dude, we got to come.
You taking Preston to this?
No, I just did it this morning.
Oh, okay, we're going like.
But yeah, so you put on this blindfold and you put on the headphones and then it starts playing like you know the frequency is like.
You just blew up the whole microphone.
Sorry.
No, that's cool. So we're gonna do this.
We're gonna do this, but it was crazy. Like if you just let your subconscious go.
Yeah.
It definitely. Minutes felt like 5 minutes.
Dude, I'm telling you, these things, there's stuff out there that's like hoaxes and stuff. But
yeah.
I'm telling you, like when I did my breath work, when I do the cold plunge, when I do these kind of things, it is real. There is like significant impact that you can have on your, just your mental state, your body. I do want to go back to one thing that I notice. You know, in people like you, and I was the same way, is that the fact that you didn't have money growing up.
Yeah.
There was ways that something that drove you to go out and work hard.
Right.
Because, and then back to like how kids that are in church get to be, you know, a lot of them turn out to be, the ones that turn out to be stars, usually you can trace it back to that they had early on access to musical instruments, stages, things like that.
Right.
The same, you know, if you've ever read that book Outliers, there's a great book, by the way, but like they talk about how Bill Gates when he was a kid, he was one of the, he lived nearby one of the universities that had a computer. So when he was young, he had early access to computing and, you know, being able to do, what was it, coding and learn all that stuff at a young age. So that the reason why there's these outliers, people that have this great success, is because they get an early start, which is an advantage. Mm-hmm. They said that, I think in that book, they talk about a lot of the reason why a lot of professional hockey players are Canadian, you know, they start so early. And then they even talked about like when people were born, like the months they were born meant they got into certain clubs, you know, and coaching earlier on at an early age. So my point is, I think a lot of the success that, you know, we see is a lot of its effort, like a ton of effort, starting early, putting in all that time. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, it's not like this accidental, you got lucky kind of scenario.
No.
It's your luck improves and increases the more you've put the effort in.
Yeah. I mean, when I was doing, so I was kind of getting into this when I was going through my timeline. I feel like I talked about that band a lot, but the band eventually broke up. We were in LA. We had a production deal that was supposed to kick off. It fell through. And then we didn't know what we were going to do. And because I was working, I was seeing what songwriters did and producers. I was like, man, you know, I don't love touring. I don't love being in a new city every night. I don't love sitting in a van or on a tour bus. Just like being, it's like Groundhog's Day. It's just on a loop every day. And it's just like,
I can see
just,
where you might be like, well, I don't even know what town I'm in.
You're literally like, you wake up, you don't know where you are. And it's just like, you know, a constant cycle of like not sleeping, cigarettes, alcohol, and coffee. Like just never ends. And fast food.
And in a van with like seven dudes or eight dudes.
Yeah, it sucks. So yeah, it smells bad all the time. All the time. And you're basically like in a marriage with like seven dudes
with different personalities.
More than that, it's like summer camp for like months because you're actually with the same bands on tour,
right?
And you just, it's fun. And then one day you wake up and you're like,
I'm done.
I miss my mom.
Call her on a payphone.
I want to come home. But I realized that I was like, I like being creative. I like being in the studio. I would rather like be in the studio and make 100 songs a year that aren't all my own, than be on the road. And then I also realized, I was like, well, you can make a lot more money doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, as an artist, you can too. You can, you know, grow a fan base and do all that. But you're just committed to your record cycles, a constant hustle. And it also, it's nice to be like out of a limelight and kind of just behind the scenes and kind of like fade away. Just live your own life and be your own person.
I can't imagine being a star where you couldn't go anywhere and like people would, you know, bug you. And
yeah, we were never like that. But we were playing like House of Blues venues and We opened for like Kelly Clarkson for a few shows and opening for like a lot of like on tour with circuits with bands that were popular at the time. So it's like we'd finish a show and it'd be like autographs and pictures and go to malls and like people would notice us and stuff that were like in that scene. But we were never like famous, you know?
Yeah.
We were on like radio shows and things, but it never got to like that point. But anyway, I went into music production, started learning how to do that. And I got Logic, the recording software to learn how to do that. I just taught myself, and people always ask me like, how'd you learn how to do everything you do? And I'm like, YouTube,
everything from YouTube. A lot of failure, like, right? Like,
yeah,
just figuring it out.
Yeah. YouTube. And I had a mentor named Jeff Giuliano, who's still like a mentor to me from this day that I've known since I was 19. He's a mix engineer. And most of what I do nowadays is mix engineering and mix records for people. And
shout out to Jeff.
Shout out Jeff Giuliano.
He mixed one of my daughters.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Three of them. Maybe.
He's incredible. Amazing credits and just an incredible person. And I've, you know, he shared so much wisdom with me over the years about his process that unlocked stuff for me. So it's like,
it's cool.
I do think, yeah, having a mentor in whatever field you're in is massive. Like just some kind of guidance.
Yeah.
Even
it's,
if some,
it's so important.
Yeah. I mean, because obviously things change from like, industries change over time.
Yep.
But if you're able to keep having a career in an industry for 20 plus years, you have a lot to impart. So, I learned.
Plus your network just grows and.
Yeah, absolutely. So I owe a ton.
So let's jump to, the first time you met Kanye.
Yeah. The first time I met.
And how that happened. Like,
well, okay. So I'm going to try and do this quickly. So I got my job working for Kanye in 2019, and I got the job through the most unlikely connection ever. I have a friend named Josh Bales who lives in LA. He worked at a rehearsal space called I'm not going to remember it, so it doesn't matter. But it's a big rehearsal space where people rehearse for tours. And Kanye was starting to do his Sunday service choir thing after he decided he believed in Jesus and wanted to have his own church services.
Which was so random.
Yeah, it was actually kind of awesome. So Josh was working at the rehearsal space when they were rehearsing. And Josh was a friend of mine through another mutual friend in the industry. And Josh was making his own music independently. And he would come down from LA to Encinitas and I would like produce songs for him. We'd hang out and we just became homies. And he's at this rehearsal space and Kanye's people are there. And Kanye is like famous for firing everyone that works for him all at one time.
No wonder he liked Trump, because he's firing
people. He was like,
yeah,
you're all fired.
You're fired all the time.
You'd like wake up in the morning and be like a text with like 20 people. It's like all these people are banned. And you're like,
what?
My friends. Yeah. All the time. Yeah. Man. So the people approach Josh and they're like, hey, we need engineers for the studio house in Calabasas because he's getting ready to make a new record. And Josh goes, yeah. And then Josh calls me and he goes, he's like, hey man, I just took a job working for Kanye and I have no idea how to use Pro Tools or how to do any of his stuff. I was like, bro, I got you. I'm going to send you a template. I'm going to send you a bunch of tips. You got this. Like, it's too big of an opportunity. You already made the jump. Like, just send it. Just
now go you gotta
for
do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So he goes in and Josh is just like salt of the earth. Like, one of the best people ever. And so very, very, very quickly, he started serving Kanye in other ways than just the studio. Like, Kanye will just ask you to do random stuff. Long story short, just to fast forward, Josh ended up being like part of his robotics program.
No way. Just if Kanye likes somebody, he probably just keeps him
he
around.
He's just like, I like your vision. You're in robotics now. And you're like, what?
Yeah,
wow. But anyway, so Josh was working for him and people kept getting fired. And Josh hit me up and like, I think it was like spring of 2019. And he's like, hey man, do you want to come by the studio in Calabasas and like see the operation? Like, it could be a really cool opportunity for you to possibly work here. So I went and I walked in and I could like sense the tension in the studio house. Like, it just was chaos. It was just, you could tell like people were panicking. Nobody was sleeping. I was like, you all are like basically underslept, underfed special operators. And then I was hanging out with Josh when we were at dinner and he's like looking at his phone constantly, like, cause he might be summoned.
Wow. And cause if you don't respond to Kanye, quick,
and it was good money. And, yeah, and they were like, he was like, if you want the job, you can come here and start like tomorrow at like 6 a.m. I was like, I thought about it. I was like, man, that would be really cool. And I said, you know what? Seems like you guys are like still in this phase of figuring things out. It's like too chaotic. I think that's going to stress me out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you guys get to a place where you like have a record and you're making moves, like call me. So months went by, Josh kind of like disappeared because he was deep in Kanye world.
The Kanye hole.
And then he resurfaced in October. He's like, hey man, we're trying to finish this record, but we're in Wyoming.
Oh, shoot.
He's like, we're in Cody, Wyoming. It's like, why are you in Cody, Wyoming?
Yeah.
But I love the mountains. So I was like, I'd be down. Yeah, yeah. Why not? Come to like a ranch in Wyoming. Like, that sounds amazing. Like Yellowstone like an and adventure. Kanye, like married together. Why not? Like,
right.
Who knows? So I said yes. And I came and worked for like a couple gigs with them in LA, did like a couple Sunday service things. And then their head engineer, Josh Berg, hit me up and was like, hey man, we're going back to Cody to work on another new record. This was like right after Jesus is King was released. Cause mm-hmm. I came on right at the end of Jesus is King. So we went to Wyoming to start working on the record that eventually became Donda, the last record. And I hopped on a plane to Cody. And I had no idea what I was getting into. And I get off the plane in Cody, Wyoming, like small airport with like three gates.
Three gates.
I get in like this SUV with a bunch of random guys. I don't know who they are. I don't know what they do.
I can tell
some are producers. I can tell some are rappers. I can tell I don't have any idea what some of them do. Some of them were engineers. Some of them worked for Yeezy. And we're like 20 minutes from the airport. We pull into this ranch. And you go, it's like you're going under like, you know, the gable of like a ranch or whatever, mm-hmm. all that. And then we pull up to this big cabin, chalet, whatever you want to call it.
Like a massive
walk
house.
In. And it was not like you, when you think Kanye, you're like, this guy's successful. He has a lot of money. This is going to be state of the art stuff. Everything's going to be clean. You're going to be like super expensive desks and equipment.
Yeah.
And we walk upstairs to the lodge. And it's like card tables, folding tables.
Oh, geez.
Like KRK Rocket speakers that are like $800 each, like basic interfaces. Like there's like a Sony C800.
Like it was just thrown together. Like there was not intentional.
Yeah, I mean, there was some nice equipment, but it just wasn't, it was like hodgepodge, in my opinion. Like, I don't want to, I hope that doesn't offend anybody, but it was just. No,
but I mean, if you're a billionaire, like, you would think it'd be like this beautiful studio. Yeah, with,
like, and it was not like a super nice lodge. And so I was like, oh man, okay. So it was like, you know, just got in and went like straight to work. And so he flew in and they were doing this thing where they, the way he makes a record is he has all of his producers come in and they do a listening session and they'll play like 100 to 200 tracks for him. And then he just has a mic and everything's recording and he just starts freestyling and mumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's a melody there, a vibe or a flow, then that'll get selected as a song that gets cut up for later consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to bring they were up in his house doing that at his home studio on the ranch. And so our head engineer hit me up and was like, yo, we need a hard drive. So I had to go up and bring the hard drive. And I come up and bring the hard drive. And I walk in the house and he's on the couch. And he just comes up to me, like gives me a handshake and is like, hey man, we're really glad you're here. Thanks for being here.
That's cool.
Which is cool because before I got the job, I had to send in like a headshot of myself and a list of my credits. So mm-hmm. like I had to be vetted by him. Like,
yeah.
And he communicates like only by text. Like he doesn't have an email address or anything.
Wow.
And yeah, so that was when I first met him. And then a couple nights later, he's like famous for his rants. Mm-hmm. Like just famous for.
Oh, yeah. He'll just keep going. Just all over the place,
all over the place. And I had heard about these. So I was so excited that I was going to get to be a part of one.
Yeah.
I started at like 10 p.m. in the upper lodge. He had his whole team of fashionista people bring in a bunch of shoes. And so he's doing shoes and music at the same time.
No way.
And I won't go into too much detail because I can't, but long story short, like he just goes on this long rant about like the state of the world, technology, fashion, what he's going to do with Yeezy, the new music, his relationship with Jesus, how he's going to bridge the gap between the secular and new technology and the spiritual. And
was this before he wanted to run for president?
Yeah. Yeah. And his frustrations with everything. And he's just going on and like, is literally him. It's like a monologue for like 5 hours. Like I left it like,
he can talk for that.
Oh
long.
Yeah. Like I left at like 3 a.m.
Jeez.
And, but it was really amazing because like there wasn't anything he said where I disagreed with him. Like he'd go off on tangents like I'm doing now, but I mean, he's just an intense guy. Like,
and do you think there was any, well, you may not be able to answer this. I was going to ask if there's any drugs involved in that or if it was maybe like medicine or anything, or is that just him? That's just him.
He wasn't drinking. There's no alcohol. There's no drugs, none of that stuff. Like he's just sober as could be. And at that point he was like fully like all about, I mean, I can't speak to his faith now, but he was like all about Jesus.
Yeah.
And actually the Sunday service thing was really cool. The whole reason I wanted to work there was because I got pulled into the Sunday service stuff and it was really genuine and it was really authentic.
That's cool.
And as a person of faith, like I was really drawn to that because I was like, this is amazing. Like we would go do Sunday services
mm-hmm.
and the Sunday service was produced and it had an amazing choir. Like the best, coolest church service.
When you hear a good choir, you're like, oh, what?
They would do the coolest stuff. And we'd go and it was just for him to have church and invite his friends.
Yeah.
So we would go to like an unknown location, like in Hollywood, and show up and it would be like Haley and Bieber, Justin would like come in and like sit in front of us. And then
at the
same time, like you'd have like people from like Hillsong, like big Christian music scene, like come in mm-hmm. as well. And like all these celebrities and like Big Sean and like Francis and the Lights and all these guests popping up and people that were like people of faith in the industry and all that would show up. And,
Very interesting.
And also like take part in the service itself.
Wow.
But it was really cool because it felt really authentic and his family was involved and, you know, his kids were there and all of his friends were there and everybody supported him.
Would he kind of rant or do anything during the service?
He really didn't. He would sometimes get on something and like play a part, but it was really like, it was kind of like for him to receive. Like he didn't really necessarily like.
It wasn't him speaking. And
sometimes he would say stuff, but it would mostly be like him just encouraging other people to participate, I think.
So you thought that was authentic?
I thought it was. Yeah. You know, I thought it really felt
which
like
it. I'm sure it was.
It was pretty cool. So So yeah, but that was the first time I met him. And then, yeah, I was on the ranch in Cody for 6 weeks, ended up from there going with him. I was in Tokyo with him and his family for like a week.
Yeah. You told me something about, he was like, hey, you need to be on this private jet and fly to Paris or something. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah. So we're in, I'm like, what details can I say? I can say I'm in Tokyo. So I was in Tokyo with him because he gets a lot of his creative inspiration for fashion stuff from Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to go to Japan and work with some artists there and all that and bring some of his designers. So get on a flight to Japan and show up in Tokyo. We're staying at like the nicest hotel I've ever seen. I have like my own suite. You get like a piece of paper with like all these secret names and then my name on it. And you can tell like which one's like one of the Kardashian regime girls. And one who's, and there's just like randomly me. It's like Mr. David Cook. And I'm like, what is happening? What is my life?
This is crazy. Yeah.
And he ended, I was just there in case he wanted to record. So I brought portable studio equipment and set it up in my suite. He came in for a little bit to like check music and like check one of his music videos, but I worked like 1 hour and I was just in Tokyo for a week with them. And then they told me a specific time that I needed to be in the lobby to go with them to the plane. Cause it was like a massive, like the plane, it was this massive private jet that the inside looked like a living room.
Wow.
Like multiple bedrooms.
Jeez.
And I get a text from him and he's like, I'd like to record on the plane. I was like, I got you. So I get on, I'm like, okay. And I go down the lobby and they're not there. And I'm texted him and I'm like, hey bro, like, you guys aren't here.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you get to the airport? And I was like, well, I don't speak Japanese, but I'm going to try. So
they left you in the lobby.
So I had to like get in a cab with a taxi driver.
With all your equipment.
Keep in mind, like in Japan, everything's in, you know, Japanese writing. And it's speak.
It's so
I can't read
any
of that. It's all the opposite direction. So we're driving to the airport and I just tell the guy airport. I'm like, private? Private? Like, I don't know where the private, I don't know how to say you're getting on a PJ.
Yeah.
So I was able to get a hold, and I don't know what time it is, like in America, but I was able to get a hold of our assistant and he was able to direct me to where the plane was.
Oh man.
And I get to the plane and I texted him and I was like, thanks for not leaving me in Japan, bro. But I get to the plane and Kim comes out and she's like, she looks right at me and she's like, I'm really sorry, but we can't take your bags on the flight.
Oh, no.
She's like, he went shopping and there's just too much stuff. We don't have the way for it. And I was like, I don't care. I'm just so happy that I'm here. Like, just ship my stuff. Like, I just want to get on the plane.
Just ship my stuff home.
So we get on the plane and I set stuff up to record.
Like a laptop with the
speakers. Yeah, and it's like a booth, like at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he's next to me and I got my studio set up and she's across from us.
Kim.
And I actually had just been in Vegas the week before because we're in Cody and we have this song that's amazing that never got released. It was an amazing song. And he's getting a massage while I'm in the studio and he like lifts his head up and he's like, we should get Boys to Men to sing this. And I was like,
in mid-massage.
Yeah. Yeah. Like literally like that.
Wait, you're in the same room while he's getting a massage.
Well, he just gets massages all the time, like in the studio. So
I would so do that.
So I get a text from our head engineer and he's like, you want to go to Vegas? And I was like, yeah. He's like, all right, call the Palms and tell them that you need to book a studio to record Boys to Men. I was like, I don't even know how to say that. So I call the studio and I'm like, hi, this is David Cook. Yeah. I'm part of the Kanye West engineering team and I need to book your A room for Boys to Men for a Kanye song. And they were like, yep, no problem. How much of this do you want? I'm like, I don't know. Bottomless, everything. I don't know. So
champagne.
I don't know.
Tequila.
So I fly to Vegas that I'm sleep deprived that I'm making this point where I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, what is happening to me?
It was like a big, it's like you're riding a massive wave of just,
well,
something
we used to always call ourselves like the Navy SEALs of music because I mean, mad respect for what those guys do, not even close, but right. You're sleep deprived, you're jumping into unfamiliar situations the whole time.
Yeah.
You're constantly over your head, people are constantly yelling at you, it's stress, it's, I had no gray hair anywhere
before
until this.
Yeah.
And then it was like in like a month. But anyway, yeah, get to Vegas and I just had to keep telling myself, cuz I imposter syndrome is real. And I think when your career elevates really fast, you have to look in the mirror and take a deep breath and puff your shoulders up and be like, I deserve to be here.
Yeah, I got this.
I my merit and my work and all my skills got me here.
Yep.
So I have the ability to carry this through completion.
Yeah.
And I had to keep doing that because I was like, I'm about to be here with like Boys to Men who sing like the song with Mariah Carey one day and it like makes me cry every time. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But so I got in the studio. Those guys came in and they were the coolest dudes ever. They invited me to like their show later, hung out with them 2 days, like the nicest, most humble guys. Like we're reaching out later to follow up, just real ones, like really good people. And they were so talented. It was like I was losing my mind in the studio. I'm like, freaking Wanye is just letting it rip.
Still great.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And but they trusted me. They gave me like creative input and let me direct them.
You were
them.
Engineering this.
Yeah, I was so stressed out that I had another guy engineer and I just ended up like producing it.
That's so cool.
And then, yeah, so I came right from that back to go to Tokyo. So when I got on the plane, Kim hadn't heard that yet. And so Kanye's like, yo, show her the new song. And I was like, okay. And he puts it on her and he's like, guess who it is? Guess who it is? And she's like, Boys to Men. And he's like, ah.
Dude, that's so cool. You're hanging with Kim Kardashian and Ye. And their kids, like, were their kids on the plane?
Oh yeah. Their kids were like running around.
Just running around.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about their kids, but yeah, their kids were running around. The kids were awesome. And,
was like, Kendall Jenner in there or any other?
No, I met Kendall once at the ranch. She was really, really rad and down.
Did she
earth.
Pick you up or something? Or wait, you drove her to the, or something like
no,
that.
No, I would pick them. So we had a fleet of, Ford F-150 Raptors in Cody. They were all the same. So he went and bought like 6 or 7 F-150 Raptors.
Same cars, yeah.
He matte blacked all of them, deep tinted all of them. And we all got our own trucks, which was sick. Cause you're like, so cool. I'm driving this dope truck around. But the whole idea was like, cause people knew he was in Cody and it's a small town, right?
Right.
So, So he could, anybody could be driving around and people would be taking pictures of the truck because they think it was him, but they didn't know which one he was going to get out of.
Right.
And I don't know if that was intentional, but that definitely worked.
I'm sure it is.
And
then
when we would roll up to the airport, it'd be like, we drive to the private airport when he would come in with his people and you'd have like 7 blacked out rappers, like, like Secret Service picking up everybody. So we would, because he didn't have drivers, he just had engineers. We would end up like,
you'd be the driver.
People.
So you picked up Kendall.
Yeah.
Was that before? Is she the one or is it Kylie that has the tequila business?
I don't know.
I think it's Kendall.
I don't know. I don't know much about them. I like after this, I didn't learn anything new.
Yeah.
I kind of stay out of that world. Anyway.
Dude, that's crazy. That was a wild ride then.
It was wild, yeah.
And then you eventually said no more. Can't do this anymore.
Well, it got when he, and I don't want to say too much about this either. I'll say what is public knowledge. But when he got to the point where things were getting crazy.
Like when he was running for president?
Running for president, and there were some, you know, breakdowns happening publicly and Twitter rants and stuff, and he was getting canceled and all that. The situation got tense, and it no longer felt like a healthy place to be. And, I mean, it got really disorganized and really hectic.
Yeah.
So you would think, like, it wouldn't be that way, but it was, it just got really messy and really sloppy to the point where like, I was having like panic attacks. Like I couldn't function as a person anymore.
Yeah. It's not worth it.
And the stress was so real. Like when my phone would go off, I would like get the shakes. I'd be like, I always felt like someone was trying to kill me.
Well, it could have been any time of day, right? Night, middle of the morning. Like,
oh yeah.
He would just text whenever.
Well, you
he
just never
something.
Know. Somebody be like, you got to go to Cabo. You got to go to this country. You got to do this thing. You know, and it was such an amazing opportunity. And that opportunity has wholeheartedly validated me and leveled up my career. But it did get to a point where it was no longer like a viable place to work.
Yeah.
Just from a mental health standpoint. And I had to make the, I remember like being on the phone with my friend and like, I was like crying. Cause the pressure was so like bad. I was like, I don't know what to do. I was like, I'm so torn. Cause I want the success. Like I want the Grammy nominations. I want the platinum records, but I don't want to feel like I'm going to die every day.
Yeah.
And he was like, bro, that's not it. Like you're better than that. Like just choose yourself, walk away from it. And I eventually had to. I got asked to come. I got asked to go to the Superdome or whatever in Atlanta, the Mercedes Dome, and finish the record. And I thought about it for like 24 hours. Remember, I had another buddy who had gone back, and we were all talking about going back, and I couldn't believe we were talking about that. And then I remember like praying, and I was like, God, I really don't know what I should do, because I felt like I should do this because it's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I'm not supposed to go, I need like a black and white response. Mm. And I woke up the next day to a friend of mine who had gone back that week, and all his text said was, don't come back. So I was like,
that's pretty right, black and white. Yeah.
I'm gonna take that. That's my sign. So I didn't go back.
Dude. Wow. What a wild ride though, that you got to do that. That's a pretty cool thing. But at the end, you have to like decide what's best for your health and your life and what really matters in life. And but you know, the fact that you work so hard and you do all that stuff and you get to experience I'm sure you have just so many stories, right? I know there's a couple others that I know that you've told me, but and then you've been able to go work, you know, for other stars. But would you say that working with Kanye was equally less or more difficult than the mortgage business?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, working...
Because you did processing.
Yeah, so Preston.
Yeah, Preston.
Caffrey, who's one of my best friends in the whole world.
He was on the last one.
He's got his little loan processing company and does well. And so it was a while ago, so it was like 2014. I just moved to San Diego, and so like music was kind of slow. I like hit a lull, and I was like, I gotta keep afloat until things pick back up. And he's like, dude, come work for me. So I went, worked with him. I learned the business. I stuck around. I was there for like maybe 6 months, and then I peeled off to Nashville to do some stuff. Then came back. I mean, the same thing kind of happened again. I came back from Nashville. It was like beginning of 2017, and started working with him and started like processing loans more like seriously and completely.
Yeah.
And it was stressful. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. You can lose a whole deal in like 3 seconds.
Right.
You know,
you do one thing wrong. Yeah.
Freaking processor certs and dealing with HOAs and Credco. And right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, it
different. It's different, obviously, but
it's like, different because it's non-creative, but it's still problem solving. Like I felt like when I was in that industry, the way that I was able to get things done was to be creative and figure out a way to like get all my conditions done quickly and efficiently. And that, you know, cause otherwise you can wait around for an insane amount of time for people to get back to you. And, you know, it's like, you might lose your lock on a rate and that's bad. And then you're cutting your commission and, you know, you have to, the same thing. You have to be a self-starter. Like everybody I know who crushes it in real estate, especially real estate finance, is a self-starter, and they wake up
thinking about
it. And
they
work hard.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you like the most about processing?
What I liked about processing is that like when the banks closed, like we were closed.
Yeah.
Like what I do like now, it's like I'm never not working. Like I have to like follow the creative dopamine. Like
Right.
Or, you know, and artists don't sleep. They wake up earlier. They go to bed late.
Oh, for sure. Like night owls
or whatever. Some of them drink too much. Some of them are on drugs. You don't know if people are getting it.
It's so true, because they have to, or they just, that's the direction they go or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, and also when you're working with like, same, it's kind of similar. Like you're processing loans for people with a lot of money and a lot of power and who have influence, same way that you're working with an artist who has the same. So it's a lot of times it's similar.
Yeah. And what'd you hate the most about processing?
I hated that, like, I kind of felt like I was like, there was a part of me that kind of felt like I was killing the creative side of myself. Like I was sacrificing some of that. I always wanted.
It's so tedious. It's like, it's just very like dot the I's. Well,
I wanted to do really well. Cause I was like, oh man, this could be like, if I really, really, really apply myself and hustle, like I could make some like ridiculous money like quickly and I could offset stuff. But I just never got into that flow of having like a consistent pool of clients and referrals and, you know, with refis or whatever.
Right.
I still have my real estate license.
That's cool. You're like, never know. You never know what's going to happen in the music business, right? Like
you don't.
And then, you know, as soon as they cut rates again, it's going to be like, all right, let's go. Time to go.
Luckily, business is good enough now that I don't think I have to.
If you escape the mortgage business, then hand it to you. Don't come back.
I just don't want any more gray hairs, you know?
I do love the mortgage business because it's done, you know, been good to
change
me.
Your life.
Changed my life. And, you know, I do enjoy a lot of things about it. But, you know, it is almost a curse because you can make so much money in it. And then when the bad times come, it's so hard and you're like, it's not as fun, but it's like, you know, there's always that thought, like, it's going to come back. It's going to come back. Or, you know, I'm going to, you know, you work hard and then it'll pay off. So
what do you feel like has been like your secret to success in your business? Like you've built many businesses. You've always like risen above the challenge that the industry might be against at a certain time, whether it be foreclosures or bad interest rates, and you know, you always seem to weather a storm and come out ahead.
I just think not giving up. If you can just, and then not losing the enthusiasm, the optimism. It's hard, man. You, especially if you have a family and you have people that are relying on you, and you have, you know, you either run a company, you own a company, and you look at like, I've got employees that depend on this job and things like that. There's a lot of pressure when it comes to that. I think probably another secret is like not losing my cool, not like, you know, so to be able to just sort of weather the storm and know that there's going to be a sun, you know, that the storm's going to pass and there'll be sun again and the light at the end of the tunnel, but just putting your head down, working hard, just, you know, just really not giving up. I think that's the number one key for me, it has been.
And having kids that you have to pay for.
Yeah. A lot of pressure there. What is the best tequila you've ever had?
Oh, obviously this.
The Amor Indio
Wine Barrel Series is hands down the best tequila. It just is. Like, I can't believe you still have a bottle. I never thought I was going to taste this again.
I know, because there's only, 306 bottles of that particular one?
It's just so good.
One's empty, and this one actually was my favorite.
That was my favorite, Añejo. That actually is my favorite bottle.
Extra Añejo is a little more
this
wood.
Is amazing, too. This is more like I drank this the other night. On
like a cocktail.
Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, we had a bunch of this. It was great. But this almost, it's so sweet. Yeah, it tastes like a cocktail.
It's just made so well. And so many brands out there that do put sugar, not sugar, but like sugar and sweetness into their tequila that it sort of throws you off because it is so sweet. But this is just made so well. So you get smooth tequila and then you put it in a barrel, a wine barrel. It just turns out so good and delicious.
It's amazing. I haven't shared that with anybody who's not completely blown away from it.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, it's just dangerous. You can drink the whole thing.
How
have you used your personality and talent to attract new clients to your business?
Oh man, I think it's everything. You know, like you like your personality and your character, and like I know people that work in the music industry that like all they do is music.
Yep.
And that's great. And they're super talented and they're crushing it. I just want to live like a more well-rounded life.
You need time for your snowmobiling.
Well, I love music, but I love being outdoors. I love good food and wine. I love community. I love an adventure. I love photography. Like there's all these things.
But you've used that to get new clients.
Because right? I think your personal brand is your best like calling card. Because if you're doing awesome stuff, and you're attracting people to you with your good energy, you're going to be successful.
Absolutely.
Like the most successful people I know are people that have that magnetic energy that bring people to them. So if people, and also like if you have like, if you're a multifaceted, multi-layered person and you're interesting, if you're a high value person, you're just, and you're a sparky person, you're naturally going to draw people to yourself.
Yeah.
And by being cultured, you can, you know, kind of cast a wider net and create relationship with people that also have those same interests. And I think that's a huge benefit of that. So it's like, don't be boring.
Yeah, that's good. And how do you not be boring? Like unfortunately, I mean, some people have natural, interesting things about themselves, but some people you have to sometimes work at it, right?
I think some people I think we're at a point in life where like social media has kind of ruined some people.
Yeah.
Like it's taken a lot of people and made them not interesting because rather than spending the evening reading a book or having a conversation or going and doing something interesting.
Yeah.
They're expending energy just scrolling, like on a death scroll, or posting something for a hit of dopamine, like which can take a lot of time.
It kind of makes you lazy in your mind a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, maybe you want to, maybe you should go out and like meet people and do something fun, but instead you're going to sit in your bedroom and post a photo and then wait for all the likes and the comments to come in.
Sure.
And you'll get the same amount of dopamine hit without any, like, you're not taking a risk. You're not putting yourself out there and you're not actually doing anything to receive that. So it's, so you're getting this high without putting any skin in the game.
Yeah. Very lazy. It's a very, very lazy
way
high,
to do that. And so what incentive do you have to make yourself cultured and more interesting and like, go out to a bar, or go out to a nice restaurant, or go out for a hike, or travel somewhere, book a trip to Norway, or to, I don't know, whatever you want to do, or go like to a batting cage, or do take up a hobby, do yoga, make a pot, like I don't know, do something.
Do something,
Do something.
And I think one of the keys is staying curious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the thing that makes people boring is if you're in a conversation and the person on the other side's not curious about you, about anything in life. So if you keep that curiosity in your life and you're asking questions, you want to learn, you're like a sponge, you want to learn more.
Yeah.
Because everyone has something interesting about them. Yeah. Like, you know, meeting you, you know, just randomly at a coffee shop, someone could totally lose that opportunity to find out. You have so many facets in your life.
I think the sexiest thing a person can do is ask questions. Like,
yeah, be curious. Stay curious. Because
we ask so many questions and we don't listen. So I try to get like something I'm not always great at, admittedly. But I try to do, because this is how I think you build meaningful relationships, which is what drives everything in life, is when you ask someone a question,
listen.
Like I have the tendency, you will listen, of course, but I have the tendency sometimes people will answer and then I'll immediately try to interject something that helps me relate to that, which is great. That's fine. That's normal. We do that.
Normal,
but if you really, really want to get to know somebody,
ask a follow-up question. Yeah.
If you can do a follow-up question to all of your questions, you will learn the person.
It's like
you're
doubling down.
Oh, you're doubling down the whole time.
Which is rare, and which is very interesting to people. It also makes them like you better.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, oh, this person is actually really interested in me. It's not just it's fake.
Yeah.
Like, what can I now say, or how can I?
Yeah.
That's very true.
And that's in business and in dating.
Yeah, I haven't dated in 20-something years, but you're dating.
Yeah.
How's that going?
I'm in a relationship now.
Oh, so you're not dating anymore, but you're dating in a relationship.
Yes.
That's good. Cool. Well, I mean,
we graduated.
That's good. I mean, I know it must be different. You know, I've been dating so long that, you know, I don't know if you're on apps and all that, but that is also making people lazy.
Oh, it's so bad.
Because you don't have to go deep. It's very shallow, right?
I got really lucky. I found like a really good one.
That's awesome.
I got really lucky. It's a dark place. You don't want to be out there.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. Just the fact that you have so many options, like in the swiping world, right?
Yeah.
Like it would just keep everything really shallow, I think. You wouldn't be able to have the patience or the interest even to go deep if you know there's another option, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when you have 30 options for a candy bar, you're like, I don't even know which.
Yeah,
I totally messing up this example?
No. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think we're talking about social media and how people relate to one another, and dating apps fall into that. I think it's people are so used to the immediate dopamine hit.
Yeah.
But like, you can basically, like with dating apps, you have all these people that have been in these, like, our society now would call like situationships, where I mean, some of our younger single listeners will relate to this.
Yep.
And you basically, it's like you get intimate with somebody, but you're not willing to like surrender your heart enough to get hurt. So you kind of like stay in this like little limbo and it's awful. You probably know what I'm talking about. And, and it's awful. Like nobody wants to commit.
Yeah.
And people just kind of jump from one to the next and they just kind of fall back into the same comfortable place, and they're not putting any skin in the game. They're receiving intimacy. They're giving intimacy. There's no skin in the game, and nobody wants to commit, and nobody wants to be like get real. And it's kind of just created this whole like market of people that are just like hovering in this like in between. And they're just forever going to, they're like not fully single, but they're never going to get married.
Yeah.
Like
it kind of, when you said skin in the game, it kind of reminds me of the 2005 mortgage bubble when there was no skin in the game. And it just was a recipe for disaster. You know, when you have no skin in the game in a mortgage or in a real estate deal, you could walk away from that deal so easy.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, I just thought of that and it ties it in with this relationship thing. But when you have no skin in the game and you have nothing to lose, it just, it's not a good recipe for success.
Yeah.
You know, because no one cares deep enough.
If you want to win,
yeah,
you got to put all your cards down.
You got to put skin in the game.
Always.
What are your biggest challenges right now? Dave Cook.
My biggest challenges are trying to survive the American inflation crisis of Joe Biden. It's a
crisis. Yeah, Joe Biden. Yes, we have an election coming up. And there's, I think that like this year is certainly going to get a little crazier before the election happens.
I'm like, okay, so I had this thought and I said this to my friend the other day. And I was like, okay, we have an election coming up and like nobody in America is fully confident in like either candidate. Like right. People are like,
don't even know if Trump's going to be in jail.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we don't know
if Biden's going to be alive.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know if he's going to be out of jail and we don't know if Biden's going to be able to talk. So yeah. It's like,
right. Or even be able to repeat the,
or just
the words.
And we don't actually know if he is Joe Biden. So we have a lot of questions.
Well, he's certainly not the same Joe Biden that we saw like when he was with Barack back when he was a VP. He was well-spoken.
He looks different. I think he's a cyborg, dude. He's for sure a robot.
It's possible. We don't know.
I think it's way more likely that he's not Joe Biden.
Oh, that he's like an alien abduction, like skinwalker, maybe.
Who knows, man? Who knows? It's a wild world. But
but back to your point, like we don't know who's going to be president. I mean, we can look at Vegas odds and say, okay, well, you know, Vegas really usually is correct. The House always wins. They're betting on Trump.
As long as
he's not in prison.
We need something to change. And I like, you know, if people don't like Trump, I'm sorry, but he's at least someone different. And like, I think Kennedy is rad because I love that he's like anti-vaccines and all about like, you know, holistic health and like telling people to like be a real person and like be healthy, which I think, you know, if just America did that, that would be a win. Mm-hmm. But my problem, right, my challenge right now as an entrepreneur, as a business owner is like, inflation hit and like it did. It changed industries. We all felt it. Like, I feel like 2023 was like just a shit year. Like, all in all, it just like sucked. I lost like five of my biggest clients in 2023. I felt like somebody like just blew up my house.
Jeez. Yeah. And it was a tough year.
And, which is great. You know, rise to the occasion and you find new clients and you hustle and you get back on the grind is what you do. You know, which is also like, and you've experienced this before too, which is like, if you're truly an entrepreneur and you're not relying on a paycheck to come in every other week or every month.
Yep.
If you don't have that salary, like you need to always have like a plan B. You need to always be addressing your fears. Mm-hmm. And like, just because you made like 500 grand doesn't mean you're going to make 500 grand like next year. Like it's great to have a big year, but like I know so many people, myself included, where it's like you start winning big. So you start living like you're winning big because you feel like that's the new benchmark. But you know, it's probably smart to be like just a little prepared for like somebody to like breach your front lines and ruin your day because it happens.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that could be happening between today, which is May 7th and, November 8th.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, honestly, things are either going to get really good, which is unlikely. I'm just saying that so some people think I'm positive, but I'm not. I think it's going to be probably not very fun.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, if there's some COVID variants I've been seeing. But, you know, like, again, we just have to be optimistic and hope for the best. And, you know, we've been through some crazy stuff. You know, there's been some crazy hard times. And
yeah. I mean, just drink hydrogenated water. Work out.
Drink tequila.
Get some grounding in. Drink some tequila. Do your red light therapy. Like, go to Hydrate Spa in Encinitas and go in the Raja Dome and like find yourself.
Like, we should somehow get them to sponsor this podcast so we can get some free red light therapy.
Well, they need customers, so it's amazing. It's really, really awesome. So
all right. Well, we'll put a link to their page and then we'll go in there and see if we get a discount.
It's a really cool spot. And it's right off of Encinitas Boulevard, right between there and right by the like Ding Factory and the Jiu-Jitsu gym and all that right there.
That's cool.
But yeah, more of that. I mean, if you're taking care of yourself and you're eating right and you're mentally lifting. Yeah, you're lifting, you're
heavy things, just yeah, moving.
Men
around.
And women, you're just like stay mobile.
Yeah. Because it doesn't get easier.
No, like keep doing it.
They say choose your heart, right? Do you want to do difficult things now, or when you're older, it's going to be harder because you just.
I went through the winter. I was in Colorado for 3 months, and it's just like, dude, it's negative.
That's hard. Dude.
It's negative 20 degrees. You wake up in the morning. The last thing you want to do is like get in a gym and like move your body.
Right.
And I was like snowboarding and skiing and snowmobiling, but it's not the same as like an actual like strength training regimen.
Right.
So, and also it's just cold. So like, you're not like now I probably walk anywhere from like 6,000 to 10,000 steps a day, sometimes more, which is like, that's going to make you feel better than anything.
Yep.
But and like your average person should walk at least like 5,000 steps a day just to be a baseline. And most people don't do that, but I was like not walking. I just felt like crap. And then I hired a trainer, Adam Brode, who's awesome. Another shout out, Adam Brode, Instagram. He's the man.
What's up, Adam?
I started working with him like right when I got back at the end of winter, and just having like a training regimen and being able to get in the gym every day and somebody who's like keeping you accountable on your macros and your calories. Like it, I feel amazing now, but like the first 2 weeks I was like, I never want to take time off again. It's starting to hurt. It's starting to hurt to get back to baseline. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But you're crushing it.
Dude, you have to, man. You have to fight off the old man that wants
to take
over.
I've seen you in your gym. You're 50.
Dude, 50, bro. And
51 coming up.
Yeah. And it just doesn't get easier. Like, it just, no, you have to just choose your heart. You have to do it.
Yeah.
Do the hard thing.
You got the cold plunge. You got the sauna. You got to get on the red light therapy game.
I need to get the red light. Yeah. I got to go try it at that place.
It's so awesome. I went in and my neck like kind of hurt. I think I messed my neck up this week. I slept weird. And I went in and like 10 minutes, I felt like it did.
So
made
good.
Some type of improvement to how I felt. Awesome. And then, the crazy Rasha Dome, whatever that did. I need to go back in that thing because
the frequencies.
It was wild.
I'm going to go try it and then I'll report back to the
It's like borderline psychedelic. It's pretty cool.
Do you do some breath work in there too or no?
I started doing like box breathing because I just.
Yeah, it's good.
I just needed to focus. So I was doing some box breathing and putting myself in that type of like a response to it. And it definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was in there for 30 minutes. It felt like 5 minutes. And what's crazy is because the frequencies are so wild. If you like let go and you let yourself like drift into your subconscious, like I was having like physical sensations of things and like reliving some like recent memories.
Are there like big speakers in there that vibrate? Or?
No. Well, yeah. So there's something vibrating the anti-gravity chairs with the same frequencies that are emitting in the headphones. So you're getting this.
So like a subwoofer.
You're getting
maybe?
A physical response. An audible response, you're blindfolded. And so your senses are off a little bit. And then, lost myself in it. And then when you come to at the end, like when it goes through a couple of different frequency patterns. And I mean, there's crazy like research about like how they can use specific frequencies to locate like diseases and injuries in your body, like in your liver and your spine, all this stuff, which they can then like guide doctors to go in and like, or, you know, practitioners to get rid of it and get rid of the problem. But when you come out of this thing, there's like a voice that plays and it's like, repeat the following. I am aware. I am here. I'm like, I'm present.
Wow.
I'm
like a little mantra
in the real, like, yeah. Cause you could like, if you stood up right afterwards, you'd forget like where you were in time and space.
No way. Yeah. That's so cool.
At first I was like, that's lame. And then I took my blindfold off and was like, I'm actually really glad that guy said that to me.
Yeah. Cause you fall over, hit your head, you die.
Yeah. It was really cool. But yeah, it's all frequency based cool. sonic.
Well, dude, once I saw how, like when they do those frequencies, and it makes patterns into like sand
oh my
or
gosh.
Water.
Well, that does the same thing to your body.
So you're 80% water, right? So your body is making these beautiful little things. And so like, it has to be something to that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was really cool about this place was they used it's like everything's hydrogenated water, but he was, and I'm going to mess this up too. You should just have Isaac on because he'll freaking blow your mind.
I'll have him on for sure.
Yeah. I'll tell him. They have this thing that basically it hydrogenates the water. I don't know why it's hard for me to say that. But also, like, once the water is charged in like a positive way with the molecules and water stuff, I don't know. Sorry.
Hydrogen.
Yeah. Like, you can introduce new water and it won't be like flowing and be in the same like flow state, I guess. I'm totally not explaining it scientifically, but, you know, people will hopefully understand. But they introduce it, and once it goes through this conversion process through this like filter, it basically charges it to like the same pattern as the existing water. So it's all like kind of moving in synergy together.
Interesting.
And carrying the same type of like healing properties and modalities and all that stuff. Dude, so
I got to try that.
Yeah.
And we'll get him on.
Yeah, I'll tell him. He'd totally come on for sure.
And I'm sure I don't even know anything about it, so I'd love to share that.
Well, I think that stuff's super important too. Like, if you're working in this industry or any stressful entrepreneurial industry, like, so many people get so stuck in the hustle that there's seasons where you let your health go and you will be so much more efficient at your craft and in your entrepreneurial pursuits if you are also like mentally and physically like honed in.
Totally.
You will see performance boosted every time.
And why not? If there are hacks in life, it's like,
you
know, obviously nothing will replace effort and just working hard. Yeah. But if you can make yourself have more effort and more and ability to work hard by enhancing with little life hacks, I think that's huge.
I think like we're at a point with modern medicine where it's like, yeah, if I like have like some kind of trauma where like I'm cut open or I shoot myself or like I cut my leg open in the wilderness, like I'll go to a hospital and get, you know, treated for all of that and I won't get an infection. I'll get sewn up and all that. But I feel like we're at a point where like 10 years, like primary care physicians or people are going to be like, why? Why did we ever?
Yeah. Well, just, it's all a pill. Like, here's a pill. Here's a pill.
Yeah.
Here's a pill. I don't like that.
I don't either.
Cause I like preventative stuff and like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, cool. Any other shout outs you want to throw out there?
Man. We Drink Tequila. Always grateful.
The cheers, best. Cheers to that.
Best
salute.
In the game. The up and coming Babamos.
Babamos.
Life changing tequila. The Hoven. That's the best tequila I've ever had, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
The other night. The
sample.
The Hoven sample crossed with the hot tub and the cold plunge. That was top
so
notch.
Good.
Yeah.
Any other shout outs?
Shout out to
someone that's like helped you along the way.
Man, shout out to Jeff Giuliano, who's been my mentor.
Jeff, keep mixing those.
Jeff's been
awesome
great.
Records.
Shout out to Phil Wickham, local artist who is also on the global scale, who's amazing, but lives in Encinitas. One of my main
shout
clients. Shout out to Phil. Owe him like so much thanks and gratitude for, you know, working with me and helping my career stay alive.
It's cool.
And all my other clients. And yeah.
How do people find you?
People find me on Instagram at Splash of Soda. That is my brand. That's my moniker, Splash of Soda.
Awesome.
Find me there. Link to my website, email. Sweet. Say what's up.
Give Dave a shout out or go see his page. And thanks everyone for listening to this episode. Please like, share, tell people about us. It's how we grow. And we'll see you on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.
You.
Cheers. Thanks, buddy.
That was a good one.
The $1 Million Mortgage Experience Podcast.